This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, May 14th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up in today's program, we'll get the latest evaluation of the pandemic and mitigation efforts from state health officials. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. We'll speak with a psychologist and suicide prevention counselor. And a look at homelessness in Denver. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, when you can get your weekend started off right with music until noon today. But first, we'll start with the headlines. Huge news from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Thursday, with the director announcing those who are fully vaccinated no longer need to wear masks in most circumstances. That means Colorado's mask mandate may likely change in the near future to align with new federal guidance. We'll have more on the new COVID news coming up in the magazine following the headlines. A federal lawsuit has been filed claiming a Colorado congressman did not implement proper protections against the coronavirus. The lawsuit was filed by Brandon Pope, a former staffer of Congressman Doug Lamborn, a Republican from Colorado Springs. Pope says the congressman took a reckless and dangerous approach to COVID-19 and fired him for calling for more protections against the virus. Lamborn's office denies the charges. The lawsuit also claims that Lamborn and top staffers flaunted safety measures after some staffers tested positive for the virus, and that staffers were asked to perform personal tasks for the Lamborn family. Colorado State Patrol has found a unique way to tackle an increase in dangerous street racing during the pandemic. KGNU's Steve Miller says traditional tactics have not been working, so law enforcement is providing a controlled environment for those who can't get enough speed.
Denver police have tried using the department's helicopter to deter the racing and have closed lanes in areas often used by the racers. The Associated Press reports that the Colorado State Patrol has teamed with Bandimere Speedway to attract street racers off the street and onto the racetrack in the foothills west of Denver. Those participating in this event may have a chance to line up to race with a state trooper. The Colorado State Patrol has been using the Take It to the Track event for more than a decade, but its goals have more urgency after two recent high-profile street racing incidents in the area. State Trooper Josh Lewis, who beat a Toyota SUV in his first race last week, feels that this is a much safer way to release the urge of street racing. He said that most who show up to the race at the Speedway drove highly tuned cars, but occasionally a stock SUV or pickup showed up. The event takes place every Wednesday throughout the summer. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A man who allegedly entered U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office illegally during the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol was arrested Wednesday in Denver by the FBI. Court records show that Hunter Palm was identified to federal investigators by a family member. Palm earlier told investigators he was pushed into the Capitol, but according to the affidavit, surveillance video showed him walking in freely and also showed him shouting, "Stop the steal." So far, 8 Coloradans have been arrested on charges that they participated in the riot, including Logan Grover of Erie. The riot disrupted the certification of the 2020 presidential election results. Approximately 4,400 new people filed for traditional unemployment benefits in the week ending May 13th, a very slight drop of 77 from the week before. The Colorado Department of Labor and Employment said the figure marks the first time that the state had two straight weeks of fewer than 5,000 new claims for benefits since the start of the pandemic. Officials with Rocky Mountain National Park said Thursday that last year's forest fires are going to make some foot trails off limits this year. KGNU's Roz Brown has more.
Memorial Day is just 2 weeks away, and the holiday traditionally marks the start of Colorado's tourism season. Nonetheless, if you're a hiker, beware that many foot trails inside the burn areas of the Cameron Peak and East Troublesome wildfires may be closed for the entire season. In a press release this week, the Park Service said it's unknown when all park trails impacted by the fires of 2020 will reopen. A few will likely remain closed for the season. The Cameron Peak fire last August did not start inside the park, but quickly encroached on the park's northwest corner before it stalled. The East Troublesome fire started in October, some distance from the park's western side. But by October 21st, both blazes had made their way into the park when high winds hit the area. Park officials said they are most concerned about burned trees falling unexpectedly and injuring trail users. By the way, if you're planning to travel through Rocky Mountain National Park this summer, mark your calendar for Friday, March 28th. That's the date the park system will implement a new timed entry permit system, similar to the one last summer, that will be required upon entry. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Boulder High School students chose 9:07 a.m. yesterday to walk out of classes in support of survivors of sexual violence. The time 9:07 was chosen to honor the 97% of women who say they have experienced some form of sexual harassment or assault. Upon exiting, students left the classroom and gathered outside to listen to speakers. A prevention education specialist from Boulder County's Moving to End Sexual Assault urged the students to help shift cultural norms by having discussions about consent and boundaries. The Boulder High walkout follows a similar one at Fairview High School last month. It resulted in Boulder Valley School District creating a new Title IX Advisory Council to better address issues surrounding sexual violence. Second District Representative Joe Neguse introduced legislation yesterday to rename a Boulder post office after the police officer killed in the King Soopers grocery store shooting. If passed, the bill would designate the post office located at 1905 15th Street as the Officer Eric H. Talley Post Office Building. Talley was among the first officers to respond to the shooting on March 22nd. A spokesperson for Neguse, who represents the district that includes Boulder, said the bill had the support of all seven of Colorado's U.S. House members. Weather along the Front Range today, a 40% chance of rain returning with cloudy skies and a high around 70 degrees. A near identical forecast for Saturday with a high of 64 predicted, and the same for Sunday when the chance of rain is 50%. This is turning out to be a very wet May. Right now, it's 49 degrees outside our Boulder studios. Colorado's COVID situation continues to improve with declines in both cases and hospitalizations. Death rates have been steadily falling with the growth in the population of fully vaccinated individuals.
The rates continue to be highest among middle and high school students, but across all age groups, we are seeing clear signs of improvement in our case trends right now.
That's state epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Herlihy. She says Colorado may reach herd immunity sometime over the summer.
Some work that our modeling team has done has suggested that sometime this summer we could potentially reach one of those lower level thresholds, that 70% range, if we continue to see high vaccination uptake.
A key to reaching herd immunity is the vaccination of a critical mass of the population. This week, both the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention granted emergency authorization for the use of the Pfizer vaccine in 12 to 15-year-olds. Dr. Eric France is the chief medical officer for the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment.
It's a good week for vaccines. Great news that the Pfizer vaccine has now been approved for children ages 12 to 15 years of age. This should quickly get us back to a more normal life for our children and students. We know today in Colorado that the highest case rates are among persons 11 to 17. And so being able to vaccinate these folks will certainly help control our spread, get students back into camps, back into school, and return us all to a life of normalcy.
State health authorities say they continue to request the full supply of available vaccines and that meeting demand among the newly eligible population should not be a problem. Kate McIntyre, deputy director of the State Vaccine Task Force, says efforts are also underway to make getting the vaccine as convenient as possible.
With regard to school-aged vaccinations, we are working with our local public health agencies. They're really leading the effort to vaccinate across this age group with the school-aged age group. And the state's working closely with all of our local public health agencies, and we're ready to help if any school district does need assistance or any local public health authority requests assistance from us.
The CDC has issued new guidance that allows for fully vaccinated individuals to gather in small groups indoors without masks. But state officials seem to want to err on the side of caution for the time being, noting that fully vaccinated means 2 weeks out from the final dose. An estimated 47% of eligible Coloradans are now fully vaccinated. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and this year it comes 14 months deep into a global pandemic. Several organizations are using the opportunity to provide free mental health services. Among them is the Interfaith Network on Mental Illness. Joining me now is Dr. Sally Spencer-Thomas. She will be co-hosting a free webinar Saturday, May 15th, on the role of faith communities in suicide prevention, intervention, and crisis response. Thank you for joining me today.
I'm so grateful to be here, Shannon. Thanks for covering this important topic.
Now, as a healthcare provider, what trends have you witnessed in mental health over the course of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of speculation that suicide rates would skyrocket because it was really a perfect storm of all kinds of stressors. But in fact, the preliminary results so far show that suicide rates actually dropped 5% in 2020. However, the data is complicated. There are pockets of our population, specifically communities of color, that have seen increases in suicide rates. And we also saw increases in overdoses and accidental deaths, many of which are probable suicides. So the answer is complicated. Nevertheless, many people have been impacted by the pandemic through isolation, disruption, and uncertainty. I think we've all felt our mental health be challenged during the last 15 months.
Does this complicated situation, as you call it, appear to be easing up now with increased vaccinations and looser restrictions? Or is there a moment of transitioning out of shock and getting hit with the full force of what we've all been through?
I think it's too early to tell. I think there is glimmers of hope of reconnecting with people that we haven't seen for a while and opportunities that we have delayed. But I don't think the story of the pandemic is anywhere near over.
Can you give us the details of this webinar that you'll be hosting on Saturday for folks who would like to know more?
Sure. So it's a free webinar, and you can visit the Interfaith Network on Mental Illness website to register for the webinar. And it will be an interfaith panel covering Christian, Jewish, and Islamic perspectives. And we'll also be doing a workshop for people to help think through how their faith communities and their spiritual practices can inform suicide prevention, intervention, and crisis response.
How do faith communities play a role?
They play a very unique and important role in the overall picture of suicide prevention. Most people think of it as only a mental health issue. And yes, mental health plays a role, but so does spiritual health and so does social justice. We can send people to counselors all day, but if our world is toxic, it's not going to help very much. We have to address things larger than ourselves, and faith communities and spirituality really help us start to look at those issues and address them. Faith communities of all parts of the world have core tenets that really focus on valuing life and give us tools on how to survive hardship. They also provide a community that we fall into when we are in crisis or when our communities are going through hard times. We tend to pull together in our faith communities. So they provide an incredibly supportive role in our healing and also in suicide prevention.
Dr. Sally Spencer-Thomas, is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't touch on with my questions?
Yeah, everybody come. It doesn't matter if you're part of a faith community or not. We'll be touching on spiritual practices. There's a lot to discuss here. It's going to be 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and we invite all of you to join us.
Dr. Sally Spencer-Thomas, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
The pandemic has had a devastating impact on the economic situation of many working people. For some, loss of income has resulted in evictions and pushed tenants into homelessness. It's a situation that's visible on the streets of Denver and Boulder. Denver has designated some pockets of the city as safe camping areas, thereby allowing people to sleep in tents. But some area residents, like in Denver's Park Hill neighborhood, want to see these sites gone. KGNU's Rosana Longo spoke with Kathleen Van Voorhees, Director of Housing Justice at the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado in Denver.
We've had a homeless issue in Denver for over 30 years, so it's not that this was new, but we did see an increase because we had a lot of individuals who were evicted. We had a lot of individuals whose hourly jobs or seasonal jobs were lost due to the economic shutdown, due to the inability to go and work at Coors Field last summer, to work as a waiter or waitress or bartender or general manager with restaurants being shut down. So we have a lot of individuals in our state who are barely making means anyway to live in the state of Colorado. You know, we're the eighth most expensive state when it comes to housing. And so you truly have to work about two full-time minimum wage jobs to afford a two-bedroom apartment in our state. And so we have plenty of individuals who are barely making their rent when they're able to work. And so when we saw the economic shutdown, we began to see many evictions. We began to see many people who could not pay for their hotel rental, who could not pay for their rent, who could not afford to, if they were paying for a room in someone's house, continue on with that. And even though we saw eviction moratoriums in place, there were some lapses in that. We also saw individuals who are illegally evicted. We're seeing that across the nation. So these things did all lead to homelessness. We also saw an unprecedented increase in domestic violence. The domestic violence hotlines increased about 98% in the first month of the national shutdown. And so in Colorado, we have a safe outdoor space that serves only domestic violence victims. 100% of individuals who have come there have severe domestic violence, have been fleeing partners. And as we've seen this increase across the nation, you know, Denver's not immune to that. So we have individuals who cannot go into congregate shelter because people will know where they are, who don't have any other ability to care for themselves. And so we're seeing an increase in the number of domestic violence victims that are becoming homeless purely for lack of resources.
If you can explain to us what's going on with that outdoors installation that's going to be closing in May 31st.
The reason it was originally proposed was because we wanted to ensure people had a place to stay at home, to be safer at home during those orders. We were also very concerned about the increased number of individuals who were on the streets, knowing that not only were we seeing an increase in people becoming unhoused, but we had a 56% reduction in shelter beds due to social distancing, closing of shelters for safety, closing of basic congregate overnight programs that couldn't run because volunteers couldn't get together. So we knew there was a pretty significant need. Both of the sites right now that have safe outdoor spaces in Denver were on a 6-month lease. The agreements with the neighborhood, as well as with the two congregations that opened up their congregational parking lots, was for 6 months. The Colorado Village Collaborative, as well as St. Francis Center, are opening other sites. There's a site going into Park Hill that will continue to serve people that are currently at the safe outdoor spaces so that they have options not to just return onto the streets. The other thing about these safe spaces is that we've made them really resource rich. Everyone who's come to a safe outdoor space came in through the Denver Street Outreach Collaborative. We are the most resource rich model in the nation with the safe outdoor space that is in Denver. And so, you know, there is hope that we can continue to utilize safe outdoor spaces as we look at short-term solutions for those who are unhoused. On top of the safe outdoor space, we also know that, you know, we're looking at potentially a removal of emergency order in the state of Colorado. And if that goes away, a lot of the COVID protections and hotels and things of that nature go away for the homeless as well. So outdoor space is going to be an alternative. Glad there's going to be two more, and we're hoping and advocating that we can continue that.
What do you see are the long-term solutions?
A housing first model is going to be the solution. Looking again at housing costs, not just in Colorado, but across the nation increasing, we need to look at the feasibility for people to live within these states. And so, you know, one of the things that we're really excited about is that we are seeing this conversation about housing from the Biden administration. We're also seeing this right now in the state of Colorado through a proposed Senate bill, but really looking at how do we develop affordable housing? How do we move forward our housing market in a way that's going to help individuals from our working poor down. You know, it is very easy to be classified as working poor in the state of Colorado because we have such an expensive housing market. And so the first step towards getting people truly able to have stability in our state and across our nation is to ensure that they have housing and affordable housing. Most people spend well over 80% of their paycheck on rent or on a mortgage. And that's not sustainable. Many people have to make a decision, especially in our state, about whether or not they can feed themselves and their children or whether or not they pay their rent or their mortgage. That's not okay.
I'm speaking with Dr. Kathleen Van Borges. She's Director of Housing Justice, the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado. We are talking about people experiencing homelessness as an endemic problem. You already have put out the cost of housing and the difficulties people are experiencing, but there are particular issues in the Denver metro area. What are those?
Well, we have lots of issues that lead to homelessness in the Denver metro area, as well as create sort of an unstable pathway for people who struggle with different things like substance abuse or have any form of mental illness. You know, Denver, aside from being exponentially costly to live in, did see economic downturn. Lots of seasonal jobs, hourly jobs, those went away for a really long time. Some are still away. We're seeing lots of restaurants close their doors, lots of, you know, reduction in staff needs, and even major venues. Our music market, our arts market here in Denver, you know, doesn't exist. They've been struggling exponentially throughout this whole crisis. And even the domestic violence programs, you know, they are so overrun in our state and in Denver because of their need. Many of these providers who do substance abuse or serve the homeless or domestic violence, you know, they spent through their budgets in the first quarter of 2020 and are still seeing that expenditure level in 2021. They're all competing for the same pots of money to serve people and to try and get this in the door. So really, you know, Denver has a funding problem.
What is urgent?
You know, urgently is, and we're very proud of the Colorado Village Collaborative and other partners, is continuing to try and come up with innovative ideas for short-term solutions. You know, the Interfaith Alliance has been having conversations around the state. We have a homeless and housing crisis. That's not going to go away. And we have to address it. And we have to start being innovative in our short-term solutions, whether that be safe outdoor spaces, safe parking, hotel renovation like the coalition is doing, or whether we continue to work more with partners to bring about affordable housing for long-term solutions. It's a full circle conversation. We need to realize as a community that the status quo is not working. We need to understand that things like sweeps and cleanups across cities only push people from block to block. We don't have the resources to serve individuals right now. We don't have the beds, the places. So we have to come together as a community and get behind innovative solutions if we're going to move forward out of this pandemic.
Thank you so much for such a comprehensive view that you have given us today. Is there a way that people can connect with you?
Yes, absolutely. Our Interfaith Alliance of Colorado webpage has my information with Kathleen Van Borges on it. It has my email address. We offer educational forums on homelessness and housing. We love to work with the community and organizations and bringing about affordable housing. I'd be happy to answer questions or have some conversations.
Thank you. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
This is Water Words, a fast explanation of a bit of water lingo. I'm Hannah Lee Myers. Today's water word is acre feet. Acre feet is a unit of measurement commonly used in the United States to reference a large amount of water. 1 acre foot equals 325,851 gallons. An example of acre feet used in a sentence would be something like, the amount of water in Lake Mead has dropped from 28.5 million acre feet to 11.3 million acre feet. The definition of an acre foot is the volume of 1 acre of surface area to the depth of 1 foot. So if a foot of water was standing on a 1 acre space, that's an acre foot of water. Here's another way to get a feel for just how much an acre foot of water actually is. An acre is about 60% of a soccer field, 16 tennis courts, or 90% of a football field. So imagine 1 foot of standing water covering that much space, and you're correctly imagining an acre foot. You can watch an animated video of this water word explanation on YouTube. Just search for the Water Desk channel. You can also find Water Words, the Water Buffs podcast, and take a deep dive into water issues and news at waterdesk.org.
Before we sign off today, I'd like to take a moment to honor the memory of a longtime KGNU volunteer. Corey Soup Campbell passed away on Mother's Day. Listeners heard him co-hosting Deep Rock Dave's shows for years, and every summer he greeted the community with his famous smile at our outreach tables throughout the festival season. In the words of Denver studio coordinator Dave Ashton, Corey was a son of Denver and a true original. He believed in people, not profits, thus is mourned by many of the former due to his total lack of the latter. The KGNU family extends our condolences to Corey's son, Soren, and daughter, Kincaid. And that does it for today's Morning Magazine. I'm Shannon Young.